this Sharktember, get out of the water, and join us as we dive into the original summer blockbuster, Jaws. I am, as always, your host, Carl, and I am joined, as usual, by my co-host, Alex.
Hello.
And Alex, this is, like my intro said, the OG blockbuster.
Oh, yeah.
Or not blockbuster, but summer blockbuster.
Yeah, it sort of like created the summer blockbusters as we know them.
Yeah. A great fact about Jaws is that before Jaws, like nowadays, when you see a big movie come out, it's typically, you kind of get a lot of movies coming out year-wide these days. But typically in the past, it's been summer is when the big movies come out. That's when you put out the movies that you want to succeed.
I mean, like, it still kind of is that way. Like, kind of. Summer and, like, Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, like, you had Infinity War get released this year.
Yeah.
In May, like, end of May. So it's, like, perfect for summer.
Mm.
And then the year before, you had Star Wars get released at, you know, towards the end of the year. Perfect for Christmas.
Yeah.
And then they released Solo again.
That was a bad move. With poor timing.
Learn to schedule Disney, please.
But before Jaws came out, summer was actually where Hollywood would throw movies out to die, pretty much.
Like, oh, really?
Yeah, people did not see movies in summer. And if you put out a movie in summer, that was you saying, all right, this movie is going to do terribly, just put it out then. Winter was when you put out the big blockbuster.
I mean, that kind of makes sense because, like, it was less to do with TVs and stuff and, like, people wouldn't watch stuff in the summer. They'd go outside.
Yeah, and bear in mind, this is like, the 70s and before, where most of the time people saw maybe a movie in the theater a year.
Yeah, okay.
You didn't always get people seeing, you don't get like what we do where we see a movie every week or you didn't have things like Movie Pass back then where you could just see every movie that came out. It's very much a case of like you see whatever's big that year. You pick something and you see that.
Yeah, it was also one of those ones where like I'm surprised we're like depending on where you were that summer was actually like it go to die because I know sometimes in our summers like down here in Australia.
Yeah.
It's like it's so hot, I want to go to the cinema to escape the heat.
Yeah, you don't always want to go to the beach and swim because, my God, it's 40 degrees outside and you're going to burn to a crisp.
Full of people, and maybe you're afraid of sharks.
Maybe. A fear that is very inspired by this movie. Holy shit, I was talking to my dad about this, and he saw this movie maybe when he was early teens, when this had just come out.
Because it was 1975 that it came out, yeah.
Yeah, so he was maybe around 13, 14.
Yeah.
And he was telling me he didn't even take baths for years after this movie came out.
Really?
Yep.
I know, I was reading in an interview with Richard Dreyfuss that apparently he said that the weirdest thing that they used with Jaws was apparently in some beaches in Australia, they used it as a shark warning.
Really?
They used the theme, the dun-un, dun-un. And, like, he's talked to, like, lifesavers who have also said that, like, when they see a shark, they hear it.
Oh, my God.
They hear
God.
That dun-dun.
It's John Williams.
Yeah, it's John Williams. Yeah.
And the theme for Jaws might be the most iconic music ever. Nothing really gets... The Jaws theme is, like, two notes, and nothing hits me as hard as that.
Yeah, like, I'm trying to think of other things, and the only other things I can think of is other stuff by John Williams.
John Williams is possibly, like, he's definitely up there as one of the most notable and recognizable.
The only other one that I would suggest might be the Imperial March.
Yeah.
That's more really iconic. Like, like Indiana Jones and, like, Jurassic Park, both iconic.
Definitely. Like, you hear them, you recognize them the second you hear them.
But not quite as iconic, and Hedwig's theme even less so.
Yeah. The Jaws theme is just so iconic.
Yeah.
And it stands out so much, and everyone recognizes it.
Yeah.
I can guarantee you, if you talk to people who haven't seen Jaws, I guarantee they know that soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
They know it so well.
It's like, it's played in, like, everything, like, shark-related.
Oh, absolutely. It comes across in some parodied version of it will show up in any movie involving a shark. You can't not have it.
Yeah, I know it appears in Shark Tale, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, we'll get to that next week.
Yeah, Shark Tale is next week.
way to spoil that one, like,
yeah,
10 no, minutes, in, not even, but 4 like, minutes I just, into the show.
I just wanted to mention it because it's one of those ones where, like, even in, like, films not directly about a monster shark, it appears.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like even in Finding Nemo, there'd be some iteration of it at some point, like, when we first see those sharks.
I'm not sure there is.
I don't know. Because the sharks show up and it's not immediately like...
No.
Oh, fish are friends. Not there's at least fish a moment friends, of like, not oh, food. Shark! Like terrifying moment there.
Yeah.
So it might be in that. I'll have to double check that.
Yeah, no, that actually is something that I'm interested in checking now.
Yeah.
You're right. The music is iconic.
It's incredible.
Everything else, though, kind of fades away except that theme, though, like from my memory.
Yeah.
That... Durnin,
there are a few things... Durnin. So I've seen Jaws in my life maybe... The original Jaws probably 5 times.
Yeah.
And there are definitely, like, a few standout moments in this movie.
We're going to need a bigger boat.
We're going to need a bigger boat. It's the animatronic shark on the back of the boat thrashing around.
Yeah.
Like that wide shot of that.
Yeah.
It's the moment you see the shark for the first time.
Yeah.
It's the opening.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the moments that stand out to me.
Not the dolly zoom of him.
Oh, the dolly zoom on the beach is, yeah, that's definitely like, at least being a film student, that's a shot I've seen a billion times.
Yeah, that's. I remember it's like, this is what a dolly zoom is. And they're like, just showing us that clip on repeat every time they explain what a dolly zoom is.
You've also done a lot of media stuff. Have you ever used a dolly zoom before?
No.
I've used one once.
It's very difficult.
Yeah. I tried. We had to. Problem is like, without an actual dolly rig,
yeah,
I was having to do this thing handheld.
Oh, boy.
It looked okay. Boy. It was a little shaky, but it looked all right.
Boy, why? Why you do this?
We thought it would be funny.
Okay.
This was for like a university exercise and like shooting shorts second year.
So, oh, okay. Then, yeah, it's nothing that major.
Yeah. So we were like, why not? Let's just, you know, shock reveal dolly zoom.
But yeah, like that bit of filming is like incredible. Mm. The entire, like, the cinematography of it is fantastic.
Yeah. This is a Spielberg movie.
Yeah.
Like I was saying, like, Steven Spielberg is the inventor of the modern blockbuster, the summer blockbuster. Yeah. He's kind of the most, I feel like Spielberg's definitely up there as one of the most influential directors of cinema.
I would argue he is.
Yeah. Definitely up there.
Spielberg's like a god among men.
Yeah. I remember seeing earlier, I think earlier this year, articles about like Ready Player One and how it was like, oh, the death of the modern block, like it was something about like being a crappy modern blockbuster. And it's just like, well, Spielberg directed it. He can do whatever he wants now. Like he's in his like, fuck you, I'm rich and old phase.
See, and there were movies that I just don't associate with Spielberg and I don't understand.
He's done a wide range and he's done brilliant stuff.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know why I didn't think about The Goonies, because The Goonies are like classic Spielberg.
Yeah.
It's even got the actor who played Short Round in it.
Yeah.
Kind of racist.
A little bit.
The one Asian kid, you know.
It was a different time, dude. It was a different time.
But like, I remember they were talking about the post straight Hank Spielberg being Oscar bait.
Yeah.
Didn't do so well, though.
Yeah, you get that.
But I remember looking at the cinematographer for Jaws, and he's actually done a few things.
Yeah.
I forgot what his name was. It's on the tip of my tongue.
He's looking it up.
It's Bill Butler.
Okay.
Because he built an entire rig to do the underwater scenes.
Oh. One of the things that always fascinates me about filmmaking is how they shoot underwater.
Yeah, he built an entire like rig so that way they could drop the cameras in.
Okay.
Yeah, so... He did The Rain People for Francis Ford Coppola.
Okay.
Phyllis Frank by Paul Kaufman.
Hmm.
Grease.
Oh, nice.
He was the DOP for Grease. Child's Play, Anaconda.
Oh,
Graffiti,
okay.
Graffiti Bridge.
He's done a couple of horror movies. That's nice.
2, 3, and 4 of Rocky.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he turned down Apocalypse Now.
Really?
Yeah.
Honestly, like, Apocalypse Now is a great movie and all, but I'd have probably, if I was a big name, I probably were considered turning it down too.
Did you see you've seen the doco on
I've
the making
I've seen the documentary
of,
on
of making
that.
That was
now.
Brutal for everyone involved.
Yeah, it's a sad story, that.
He did One Floor Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Okay.
Frailty and Funny Money amongst it. So he's got a nominated Academy Award for One Floor Over a Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he's done a few things, and it's actually like a real...
And some good stuff in there too, like not just...
Yeah.
I mean, a little bit of smack, but you know.
Yeah, it was interesting seeing Grease in there, as well as Child Play.
Speaking of some garbage, we saw the Meg last week, and I want to say there's a reference to Jaws that I thought about but didn't quite pick up. I wasn't 100% sure when we were talking about it. But the dog in the Meg's name is Pippin. The dog in Jaws is also named Pippin.
Oh.
That, like, I was watching the Meg, and I was like, where do I know this from? What is wrong with me? Why can't I figure this out? Why is the dog's name Pip and I know this? And then it was just like, oh, of course, it's the dog in Jaws.
Actually, that reminds me of something. The Meg is just bad Jaws.
Yeah.
Including the two sharks.
Not only that, there's a moment when I was watching Jaws where I went, hang on, they did that in the Meg. When they send the marine biologist down to the shark cage.
Yeah.
With like the poison, like the, you know, like the spear full of like shark killer poison.
Yeah.
They did the exact same thing in the Meg, only it worked in the Meg.
Yeah. It was also when they had the first shark and they're like, oh, we've got it. That's it.
Yeah.
And then it's like, this isn't the shark. Instead of the, admittedly, not like the giant megalodon.
No, it was a bit more of a, it's a bit more played out like a more shocking reveal in the Meg.
Yeah. Like, but still, I'm like, all right.
Yeah. The Meg's pretty much like a way scaled up. But less good version of Jaws.
Yeah, it's,
that's definitely
it's,
a way to put it.
It's action Jaws.
Kind, yeah, pretty much.
It's action Jaws rather than like the suspenseful Jaws.
Yeah, and Jaws is a very suspenseful movie. That's just what that's like. Coming back to that soundtrack,
yeah.
It's all about building up.
Because I did like how like at some points the what was the sailor's name?
The shark hunter.
Yeah,
I can't remember his name.
Quint. When he was talking about how he had that tattoo removed with the USS in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
And how, like, you know, the sharks were at them for days and that. And I really liked that.
Other iconic moments in that movie, at least for me, is the, at least iconic lines, is the eyes black, lifeless, black like a doll's eyes. To me, that's, like, second, like, most iconic line in that movie up there with, like, you're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah. It was really interesting watching a lot of these characters, like, the shark hunter and the shark, like
the marine biologist
interact because they have this love of sharks, basically.
Hooper.
But it's in the weirdest way.
Yeah, they have a very different appreciation for sharks. And they're sort of dragged together. Like, one of them loves sharks and has this fascination with them. The other has this, like, I would say pretty justified sort of hatred of sharks.
Yeah, it was like...
But they both come from like almost a traumatic experience where the biologist, he had an experience with a thresher shark, I think it was.
Yeah.
That tore apart his, like a small one person boat. Whereas Quint, the shark hunter, who like, well, you've got the biologist who's dedicated his life to studying sharks. You've got the person who's dedicating his life to killing them because he lost like so many crewmen and had these terrifying close encounters in open ocean with sharks.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. All that happened. Considering, like, I did like it though because it gave him depth about like how crazy the dude is.
Yeah, it actually justified it. So he's not just the crazy guy in the back of town hall scraping his fingers down the chalkboard. He's the World War II veteran who got away, who was one of the 300 people who escaped.
See, that's another old school thing that I can't think of in a film before Jaws. Maybe I haven't seen it. Like, what, the whole fingernail scraping on the chalkboard?
The sudden, like, person in the back of the hole scraping their fingernails on the chalkboard to get the attention.
Yeah, is that another thing that people have just ripped from Jaws?
I think so. I feel like it started... I haven't seen it before Jaws. And it's such an iconic thing that's appeared a lot. So it might
be...
It's the sound is, I think, from before that. Like, everyone knows that fingernails down a chalkboard feeling. Like, just saying it and miming the action makes my eye twitch.
Yeah.
So I feel like that predates Jaws, but using that as a film mechanism is
it's bizarre. It's like Jaws. I don't think I've seen it before Jaws.
Yeah.
It was definitely one of those ones where I don't know. I feel like I would have seen it though.
Yeah.
But then again, I feel like the whole crazy mariner thing.
Oh, the crazy mariner thing has been played so much.
Yeah. And that's another addition to Jaws, but that makes it a richer story though.
Yeah. That's the thing. Jaws doesn't just give you a crazy mariner. It gives you a crazy mariner who's right.
Yeah.
In a way. Like, yeah, he's got this justification for his being a crazy person.
Yeah.
But he's also kind of an expert at what he does.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of shocking. Like, he shows up on, like, a crappy old boat. But
yeah.
Then he's, like, prepped. He's got his harpoon gun. He's just like, yeah, we'll shoot it full of barrels and eventually he'll be forced to the surface. Then we'll get him.
Yeah, he's like, get him to the surface and he's gone.
Yeah, we'll just make him exhaust himself until he's dead.
Yeah, I mean, like, which is fair enough.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then conversely, you have the scientist who's packed like everything.
Who's packed a shark cage, scuba gear.
Yeah, and it's
he's preparing to get in the water with this thing, which is insanity when we find out what happens.
Yeah, it's just one of those ones where you look at him and it's like, and Quint sort of laughs at Hooper.
Yeah, he thinks it's the stupidest thing ever. Like, oh, you've got a shark cage, you idiot! You're gonna jump in the water with that thing, lunatic.
Yeah, which is fair enough.
Which is justified when the thing rips the cage apart.
Yeah, but yeah, there was
and then you've got the Martin, the chief of police,
who's hydrophobic.
Yeah, So I wrote up, after I finished watching this, I had this moment where I was like, where I realized what, like, a way to summarize this movie, like a great synopsis for this.
All right, let's hear it.
So my synopsis of Jaws is the story of a New York cop who has to overcome his fear of water by defeating its strongest champion.
Yeah.
It's like a Scott Pilgrim versus the World of, like, you got to defeat the greatest warrior of the sea in order to get in the water.
Yeah,
It's a great fish out of water, like, yeah, I know, right? Fish out of water scene to have him in the boat with the shark hunter and the marine biologist.
Yeah.
It's great. Like, he's tagging along for this mission.
Yeah. And then I like when he's like, oh, get on the, I forgot what he called it. Like the walkway off the boat. And and Brody's like, no.
No. Go further up. No. I'm not walking up this gangway. Like up the plank. I'm not walking the plank to the shark.
Just so you get some scale.
Yeah, just so you can get a reference photo for your album.
Yeah, it was wild though. Like you had the barrels and my favorite thing was that like how Hooper's like haven't had to pass basic seamanship in a while. I liked it that like there was a lot of depth to the characters.
Yeah.
Like how Hooper was rich, and they mentioned it, like, at the beginning, but never again.
Yeah, he shows up with, this enormous boat covered in, like, just marine biology, like, a marine biologist's wet dream of a boat.
Yeah.
It's covered in sonars, scanners, fish finders, where he's like, oh, yeah, we just swam over a large swarm of mackerel.
Yeah, and I was like,
It's like, man, this guy's entire life, hobby, and career have aligned to make him a marine biologist.
Yeah, although
this is business and pleasure for him.
Yeah, I think it's also the same. You could say the same about Quint, though.
Yeah,
it's sort of business and pleasure. He takes him. It's more of a dark pleasure out of hunting sharks.
You can see, you can definitely see the way he takes trophies from them. Yeah. Where he's keeping the jawbones.
Yeah, and he's boiling them to clear them of the meat.
Yeah, you can definitely tell he's getting some satisfaction out of it. The way the orca has a tiger shark's jawbone, like,
yeah,
basically mounted as a trophy to the prow.
Yeah.
That's just ways of showing, like, yeah, he's definitely taking, he's getting some, like, satisfaction out of this in some way. That or it's, like, a case of, like, yeah, I'm just going to murder sharks, vengeance for my, you know, for the hundreds of crewmen.
Yeah, there was a lot of deeper characters. I also liked how in the thing there was like there's definitely a divide between islanders and non-islanders.
Oh, there's like, it's kind of weird how much they kind of touch on it and then don't in the opening act, where it's just like you're an islander or you're not, you're born here or you ain't.
Yeah,
it's kind of weird how much they put a little bit of focus on it at the beginning.
Yeah, and then I think that's like when Brody tries to close the beach. That's definitely something about why he receives pushback from the mayor.
And the mayor even flat out says as much in the scene where we meet him, where he's like, hey, it's your first week on the job. What are you doing?
Yeah, and it's like, you're not an islander. Like, jog on.
Yeah, keep moving, pal. You ain't closing the beach. Let me lay down the law for you. Like, the mayor gives him a shakedown at the beginning of this movie, saying, you are not closing the beaches. The beach is needed for tourism.
Yeah, and then someone dies, and it's like, ooh.
And then many people die.
And then it still only closes it for 24 hours.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are you doing, man?
There's a moment where I kind of got a bit confused here because the mayor has his whole like, yeah, we need to be open for the 4th of July in the weekend. You know, no issues about that. And then he's walking the beach on the 4th of July and there's a moment where he's like, get in the water, pal.
Yeah.
Take a swim. No one's swimming. Yeah. Ferries have already shown up bringing droves of people across to the island. He doesn't need people. He's not paid. Like, tourism isn't paid per swimmer. They're not jumping into the water and dropping money into a toll, into like, you know, a toll meter. Like, oh, if you want to take a swim, chuck a couple of coins in there, tap on.
Tap on and touch on.
Yeah.
But I think it's definitely to do with something about repeat tourism, though.
Yeah.
Like enjoying the beach.
That's true.
But then there were sharks in the water, so yeah. It's going to come back.
So are you really going to have a fun time if like if you see someone get eaten by a shark?
Like that dude getting in the water seemed very dramatic for a dude getting into the water. Yeah. There was definitely like, this is the final moment for him and his kids.
Well, in all fairness, someone had just been eaten the day before.
Yeah, a small child especially.
Yeah, a kid had been eaten. And which, like, by the way, that kid, blood fountain in that scene.
Yeah.
Like, there's a little bit of shark popping out, and it's just bubbling out.
I was actually reading that they avoided the color red in, like, sort of the set dressings and, like, costumes, just so that way when you see the blood, it's more vibrant.
Yeah. You can definitely, you definitely feel that. Like, every scene where the shark takes a bite out of somebody, you feel it. It's well done. And I think one of the things that really stands out about this movie is the animatronic shark.
Bruce.
Yeah. Sure, it's clunky. And it's an animatronic. You look at it now and it's an animatronic. And you know that. And you get that. You understand that. But there's something about it that you don't get with any other shark movie.
No.
Where there's physical presence with it.
Yeah.
When you see it swimming next to the boat, the way the water moves, it just feels so much more real. Than any other shark movie I've seen.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's plenty of killer shark movies.
Oh, there's
but
heaps.
They're all CG.
Yeah, all the sharks are CGI. Yeah. And it's not as good.
And even with The Meg, which is a huge blockbuster movie, I still didn't feel the same measure of terror and the same feeling of fear as I do with Jaws. It's just so much more real and present.
See, this comes back to Spielberg's, like, sort of traits again when he uses a lot of physical special effects rather than computer special effects.
Yeah.
It's like why Jurassic Park holds up.
Yeah.
Is because most of it is legitimate special effects. It's like the animatronic dinosaurs.
Mm.
And like you look at them and they're obviously interacting with something. And like the CGI ones in the background are fine.
There's just something about having physical presence. Like, it doesn't matter how real and how many passes you do over CG and how much subsurface scattering you do and all this, there's just something about something being there and existing in the scene that just makes it feel so much more tangible.
I found that actors generally act better.
Yeah.
And as well as the, I don't know, because like,
it's having a reference point.
Once you start making things look too real, you get into the uncanny valley and
a
it just
bit.
Looks awful.
But it's a balancing act with CG.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
With an animatronic, you can just paint it till it looks right. Yeah?
Yeah, just paint it till it looks right, and then people are like, oh, shit, you got a shark here, boy.
Yeah.
Better not eat me. Yeah, the shark was impressive.
Yeah.
I will admit. And I did like, I only saw it as a side note from all the issues that they had with the damn shark.
Yeah. As it turns out, putting a giant animatronic monster shark in water
doesn't work out.
Isn't
well.
As easy as you'd hope.
Yeah. You gotta waterproof that stuff, boy.
Yeah. But as it turns out, that made for a better movie.
Yeah, it made it a more horror vibe.
Yeah. Hiding the shark until the like second and a half, third act is genius because not being able to see the monster is always so much more frightening. And it makes that moment when they cut open the tiger shark feel just that little bit stronger because it's like, it could be that. You don't know. It's just what's been pulled out of the water. We haven't seen anything to disprove that until we see the marine biologist going, listen, that's a different shark. That's not the same one.
Yeah.
We wouldn't. Yeah. We haven't been shown the monster, so we can't disprove that ourselves.
I like how they just cut up the shark without telling anyone. Like, yeah, we're going to do it.
Hey, he's the chief of police. He can do whatever he wants. That's actually a line he gives.
Not according to the mayor.
Yeah.
Although, suits are really weird. The little anchors.
I will say, the mayor with his point about the tiger shark, when they're like, yeah, I'm not letting you do a hack job autopsy right here, right now.
That's fair enough.
He actually has a good point there.
If they pull the kid out, Jesus.
I get that there's the suggestion that he's doing it just so that the mayor's kind of hoping like that it's gonna, that, that would be, the mayor's hoping that that's the right shark.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to be proven wrong. So he's not going to let them because if they do, then he's like, well, fuck, now I have to.
But I get the feeling that he also doesn't want to be proven right in the middle of the day.
And at the same time, you can agree with him that fishing out half a child
from a girl?
Yeah, a digested person in the middle of the day on a beach full of people, including children and the eaten boy's mother.
No one's going to get back in the water.
Probably not a good bet. probably best to save it until a little bit later, or like do it in private.
Or take it
shark,
away.
Yeah, take the shark away, then hack it open. They do have a good accurate point though that I really like about the tiger shark when they cut it open and just start pulling out garbage.
Yeah.
Where they mention that, yeah, tiger sharks are like a living garbage can. They are.
Yeah.
Tiger sharks are like, you hack open a tiger shark and they're known to just eat garbage. Like, you find license plates in them. You find cans. You find just the weirdest crap.
Are tiger sharks the one that go into rivers?
No, that's bull sharks.
Yeah, I was, couldn't remember which one's which.
Yeah, bull sharks are the ones that are river faring as well, which is horrifying to me.
But they're not that big.
They're not huge, but they've still been known to take a bite of swimmers every now and again.
Take a bite of swimmers, but definitely not going to eat whole.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I want to talk about how this film sort of changed perceptions of sharks.
Yeah.
And it's led to a lot of different sorts of shark movies, including the Megas we watched last week and spoke about. There's something about sharks that seems to get people, and I think there's a lot of reasons why, but I think Jaws has a part to play.
Yeah.
Jaws definitely puts something in people in like the cultural psyche.
I don't think sharks were that terrifying a thing in society until this movie.
Yeah.
Like, sure, shark in the water, scary. Like, naturally you're gonna clear the beach when you see a shark floating around in the water. You don't want people getting eaten. But this movie coming out, I feel like has really put something in society. Like, this is one of those most influential films in society where it's really affected people in legitimate ways decades on.
Yeah. Like I was saying, makes you think about sharks.
Instantly.
Like how the surf lifesavers hear it when they see a shark.
Yeah.
But also, I think might have been Richard Dreyfuss that started up the Shark Preservation Society.
Yeah.
Like, or helps fund them because he feels kind of bad about what Jaws did.
Yeah, because this I don't have any stats, but I know this definitely contributed to shark culling.
Yeah, I definitely remember reading that it did have a part to play.
Because
it's just one of those ones where there's articles about how Jaws killed sharks.
Yeah, absolutely, and there's a lot of like sharks are a beautiful, majestic creature. They're an apex predator. Of course, they're like terrifying creatures. But it's unfortunate that the perception of them is just man eaters, and this film very much portrays them in that way.
All right, I got a stat for you.
Shoot.
In 2014, the amount of humans killed by sharks was 7.
Yep.
Sharks killed by humans, 63 million to 274 million.
Yep. It's a lot.
But yeah, but one of the things it also points out is that Jaws put a lot of sharks together, like in the cultural psyche.
Yeah.
Like, even though in the film, if you watch it, they're like, oh no, the sharks are fine.
Yeah.
Like Mako's, or Mako as they pronounce it.
Brisbane.
Yeah, that hurt me on the inside. But yeah, so there's 90% of some of up to 90% of some of the original initial numbers depleted.
Mm.
According to the Taronga and Conservation Society Australia, since 1791 there have been 703 unprovoked attacks.
Woof.
Only in Australia, and of them 186 were killed.
Damn.
But yeah, so it's definitely played a factor.
Oh yeah.
Like the WA shark cull policy was influenced by Jaws academics, reckon. Yes. Apparently there were striking similarities between for the WA government policy and the 1975 film. But you've got to remember, a lot of people in Parliament and like law stuff today would have seen this when they were a kid.
Yeah.
Like
absolutely.
They're about.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They were talking about rogue sharks. Which is a Jaws thing.
Territorialism.
Like, yeah.
If my theory about territorialism is correct, then this rogue shark.
Yeah, they would definitely talk about the Jaws effect, and it's one of those ones where I think they're right here.
Yeah.
And I think that people need to chill on sharks. Sharks are pretty dope.
Calm down, man. They're a beautiful monster.
They just like to keep swimming.
You can see, you can get, like, we were talking about this before the show. There is a thing about sharks as opposed to anything else on planet Earth that is chilling. No other animal on Earth is given as much horror movie focus as the shark.
Yeah, and I argued that, like, if snakes were, like, huge, maybe they would. Like, but, like, and actually ate people, like, took bites.
Yeah.
But there's something graphic about the blood in the water.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that a lot of the times you don't see sharks until they kill you.
Yeah, you don't see a shark. That's the thing. Water is dark. It's, like, oftentimes it's hard to see a shark coming.
Yeah.
If you're in a position to be attacked by a shark, you're in its environment. You're out of your element.
Yeah, you can't run away from a shark.
Yeah.
You're in the water.
Most sharks are way faster than a person can swim.
And bigger.
Far bigger than you.
Yeah, like, they were talking about this one weighing like 3 tons.
Yeah, this thing was the shark in Jaws is 25 feet long.
Yeah, that's like...
That's peak great white, I think.
That's 4 times my size.
And yeah.
That's huge.
It is monstrous in size. So... It makes sense why, as opposed to like bears, sharks are common in horror movies.
Yeah. Least. Also, I think bears are a lot more like you don't bother them; they don't bother you.
Yeah. Like I saw The Revenant a couple of years ago, and that movie, in my entire life, I've never wanted to mess with a bear.
Yeah.
But finally, seeing it in a movie. Of someone being mauled by a bear.
You don't want to mess with the bear?
I never want to go near a bear. I never want to have any encounter in my life where I'm within 100 feet of a bear.
I want to go see bears. I've never seen them before.
Maybe behind some glass. Not even glass, behind like... I'll see one in a zoo.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be... I don't want to be in a position where there's a bear and it's within like... And it's got the ability to come near me.
You don't want one of those up-close encounters with a bear?
Nah, man, I don't want that. Those things can open car doors.
Oh, Jesus.
I want to drive through a place with bears in it.
Why would it be unbearable?
All right, Alex, listen, you're off the show.
Oh, just wanted to pander to my audience.
All right. Can you come up with some shark puns, please? My God.
I can't think of them.
Yeah, damn right.
Come on, old chum, let's get back to it.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Speaking of chum, one of my favorite lines, like rewatching this movie and having a good focus on it, one of my favorite lines, like just throwaway little things in there, is those two guys going out onto the pier at night trying to fish for this shark.
Yeah, it's funny.
And they've cleared out like this guy's wife's freezer full of meat, and he's like, I hope we get this shark. This is my wife's Sunday roast. And the guy hooks the like this giant roast, tosses it in the ocean and says, $3,000 can buy a lot of roast.
Yeah, I like that.
I love it.
Don't give.
They're just looking for that reward and he's just like, listen, if we catch this shark, you're getting a lot of meat. And then just tosses it.
Yeah.
It's such a brilliant moment that's so small and throwaway.
Yeah, no, it's just like...
I love stuff like that.
It's like when he's complaining about having to put the chum in, when Brody's complaining about having to chum the water. And it's like, I can do steady forward.
I can do steady forward. You try chumming the water. And then the shark pops up right there behind him. It's a brilliant shot.
Yeah, he's like, oh.
I love that shot where he's chumming the water and the shark pops up over his shoulder.
And the next time you see Hooper, he's just playing solitaire. He's just sitting on the deck playing solitaire. And Quint's like, what are you doing?
I gotta say, bringing guns onto that boat, probably not the best idea.
They got so drunk.
Yeah.
So drunk.
I hope they had sunblock on because I've been on a boat. I've been on a fishing boat once when I was like 14 or 15.
Once.
Yeah, for good reason. On like an Australia Day weekend. It was on Australia Day. We went out for a fishing trip. And let me tell you, it wasn't as sunny as the days that go by in Jaws. And let me tell you, 14-year-old Carl that day got burned to hell.
Yeah,
you'd think I walked through the fires of hell that evening.
Your dad was saying that all three of you got...
Everyone. All four of us. Me, my three brothers, my dad... not three brothers. The three brothers that are me and my two brothers. And my dad just burned to hell. Everyone on that boat burned to hell. Red as tomatoes, man.
Yeah, no, stay away from that, man.
Yeah, so I'm hoping those guys were slip, slop, slap, applying every couple hours.
Maybe they were all pretty covered up, actually. They weren't, like, shirtless.
Oh, God, what was I going to say? Yeah, bringing guns onto that boat. Why? You're never going to use... Except for the one moment it worked, which is shooting a scuba tank, which was not their original plan at all.
Yeah.
A gun's not going to do anything against a shark for the most extent. So there's an episode of Mythbusters, which I love that show, where they were testing the movie idea of like, oh, you dive into water and you can't be shot at. Like, your water's effectively bulletproof. And it's bulletproof.
Yeah.
Most firearms can't penetrate a few feet of water.
Well, they can, but it's just by the time it gets through, it doesn't have any.
It has no potential. Like, there's a moment where he mentions, like, they're going through the equipment and it's like spear gun, submachine gun. A submachine gun's firing pistol rounds. The moment they hit water, no momentum left.
Yeah.
Second they hit water, they're dribbling. There's nothing.
Just get a rifle.
Exactly. A rifle, it's only going to go 3 feet down with the kind of thing he's packing. Unless you've got a 50 BMG, you've got nothing. It's not going anywhere.
You never know.
So it's like when the shark's passing by and you can see just the fin poking out of the water, don't bother shooting it. Sharks have tough scales. There's plenty of cartilage on them.
They've only got cartilage, no bones.
Exactly. You're not, like, when you're firing it, like, under a foot of water, you're not gonna kill a shark by shooting. Like, maybe if it pops onto the boat and starts taking a bite of Quint.
Put a couple of
rounds. Sure, hose him with the Mac-10, knock yourself out. But they didn't do that.
No, they didn't bother shooting.
If Quint had been sitting there with an Uzi in his back pocket, ready to go for the moment the shark surfaced, it's on the boat, just hose the thing's nose. That'll get it off you. Won't get bitten in half.
Yeah, no, but no, they decided to use guns.
Yeah, just good on here them. You go, take a rifle, walk around a bit, have some fun.
Here's a harpoon.
Yeah. Knock yourself out.
I did like them interacting, like, especially when they got drunk and started presenting war wounds.
Yeah.
That was another good character interaction. There's a lot of good... See, like, you get a lot of, like, glimpses of, like, good, like, interesting characters, and then they sort of just go away. Like, absolutely. Like, his receptionist, Polly.
Before this shark showed up, I actually took a good note on this. Before this shark showed up, the worst problem Amity Island ever had in its entire life was a bunch of 9-year-olds from a karate club karateing all the picket fences.
I know.
Nothing before this moment has ever disturbed Amity Island.
Yeah, like, it's one of those ones where, like, he's the chief of police, and people are like, yeah, this guy's parked incorrectly in front of my shop.
Yeah.
You want to do something? Like, and it's like, there's a shark attack.
He mentions, because he's a New York cop, so he mentions how he moved to Amity because one person can make a difference.
Yeah.
Because when he's in New York, he feels like there's just crime filling the streets. You have to walk your kids to school, walk them back. It's dangerous, and he can't contribute. He can't change anything in any way.
Yeah.
Whereas in Amity, it's such a small place,
and there's no murders. They mention no murders or theft.
No murders. I'm not sure about the theft. I think that was a line there.
Yeah, there was definitely no murders and no something else.
Yeah. So it's such a peaceful town in comparison. Yeah. Where sure, yeah, that's a good reason for him to move is because he can contribute, can make a difference to the city.
Yeah, and
or town.
Then become the chief of police.
Chief of police.
The dream. And I still like how they mock the accent that they have.
Yad.
Yeah, it's the Yad here, darling.
That's how you know it's like East Coast, like right near Boston, is how you know.
Yeah.
They're in the Yad near the Care.
Because they're definitely in between Boston and New York. Because they mentioned going to Boston. So you assume Boston's the closer of the two cities.
I don't remember all the states they list off. But when they put out that bounty on the shark, like the $3,000 bounty, there are people showing up from all over the West Coast to kill a shark.
East Coast.
Yeah, East Coast, sorry.
Yeah,
East
no
Coast.
One comes to the West Coast.
No, West Coast is California.
Yeah, there was definitely, like, they mentioned Rhode Island, Massachusetts.
Connecticut.
Yeah, Connecticut. I think maybe Virginia you got to mention.
Mm.
Maybe you're just thinking about the East Coast in general.
Maybe.
But yeah.
Georgia, South Carolina.
North Carolina didn't show up.
Yeah, that's actually a good moment, though, like going through that, like when everyone's jumping into the boats and he's mentioning the license plates. He's like, these guys aren't locals. I don't know these people.
Yeah.
There's some brilliant stuff in there that you kind of, like, it's great stuff.
Yeah.
It's a really good movie.
Because it shows that
the
town pretty much lives and dies by the fact that everybody knows everybody.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, those guys are locals. You deal with them.
Yeah.
I'll deal with the ones that aren't local.
I love the line where it's just like the marine biologist's telling those guys not to overfill their boat.
Yeah.
And he just tells them this. Like, he's like, the officer told me to tell you guys to stop overfilling your boat. And they just shove him off. And he's like, you're all going to die.
And then he walks into the marina. He's like, yeah, those guys on the boat are going to die.
They're all going to die.
They're going to die before they leave the marina. And they're like, all right.
I do love Hooper, like the marine biologist. He's great.
Hooper's like... kind of cynical, but not too cynical.
Yeah, and I love a few... He's kind of like, you know the whale biologist from Futurama? Like, he's got a few elements of that.
Don't ask me, I'm just a whale biologist.
He's got like a few parts of that character where he walks into the police chief's house bringing two bottles of wine. He's like, brought a red, brought a white, don't know what you're after. And then he takes the guy's dinner. He just swipes it off and he's like, anyone eating this? Mine now.
I still, no, my other
Marine
thing,
biologist, out of my way.
That reminds me, my other favorite bit is when Brody opens the wine and he's like, you're going to let that breathe.
You got to let it breathe.
And he just pours a glass.
He pours two glasses and a tumbler of wine.
Like one wine glass. Like he pours
one for his wife, one for Hooper.
Hooper, like, who just tries to stop him. Because before that, it's not just a tall tumbler. Not just a short tumbler. It's a tall tumbler.
It's a big glass.
Full of wine.
Yeah. He just fills an entire drinking glass of wine and then starts drinking it.
And Hooper's just looking at him like, what?
All right.
All right.
Guess you don't have any other glassware. That's cool.
Hooper has to stop him from filling up his glass more.
Yeah.
Because he's just going to fill it up. He just doesn't give. I just like how there's all this, like I was saying earlier, there's a lot of depth to these characters that just doesn't come out.
Yeah. Well, it comes out in snippets.
Yeah. And that's
a great way to deliver it.
It makes them seem more real, too.
The characters in this definitely have very real feelings about them. Like, they've got real fears. They've got real, like, histories behind them. And, like, justification for there's a lot of justification there for their actions. And, yeah, they're just very well-rounded three-dimensional characters.
Like how the whole hydrophobia thing, and he's... Because he doesn't go near the beach. I realized, and thinking about it later...
He stays well away from the
even
water.
Even when he's sitting at the water, he's sitting the furthest away.
Yep.
He's barely on the sand.
Yeah, he never goes near the... I was going to say the surf, but there isn't any surf in this movie. No. Amity Island has, like, the stillest beach ever.
Yeah. It's probably similar to St. Kilda, where it's like a cove.
Yeah, it's just so... I mean, it's an island.
Yeah, that's actually, you're right. That's the weird thing. It's an island.
It's Amity Island.
It should have surf.
It's just the stillest, calmest water in the world.
Yeah, I don't... That's weird.
There is no surf. It's
weird.
Crazy.
Because like the only time you get waters like that are like in the bay, in bays.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could be that there's a bay. That's I like true. How they're like, oh, don't go... Don't worry, the cop lives on the other side of the island.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a film with all about the characters.
Mm.
And less so about man versus nature, surprisingly, I think.
I think the beginning is very much like people.
Yeah.
The end is definitely the man versus nature struggle.
Yeah.
The beginning is kind of like almost bureaucracy at work.
Yeah, and it's...
Where you've got like this political fight between the chief of police and the mayor.
Yeah.
Where where one of them's trying to keep the beaches open and the other's trying to close them. One's thinking about like his town, like, you know, keeping business alive.
And
the other's thinking about the people and keeping the people alive.
And then like the mother has a go at him, Brody, because he's like, you didn't close the beach. And yeah. I tried to.
I put in my 2 cents. I tried.
Yeah. Oh well, it's definitely a good film, and
if you haven't seen Jaws, watch Jaws.
Yeah, watch it.
This Sharktember, watch Jaws. It's on. It's easy to watch. It's on Prime Video.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure
Netflix.
It's on Netflix now. Go to your local Blockbuster. I'm assuming they'll still have some copies of it if Blockbuster still exists anymore. There used to be one near me that closed this year.
Yeah, no. So the my local video shop closed this year too. Got some sweet DVDs.
So we've covered two killer shark movies. So we've done the giant killer shark movie and the original killer shark movie. Next week we're going to do something very different, where we're taking a stab at a movie that doesn't present us with the with the killer monster, and there's also an animated movie, and we're doing Shark Tale.
Yeah, yep. The sharks still are killers, but they're not blind killers. They're more the mob.
Yeah, it's the Godfather shark.
Yeah. So that's next week.
That's next week. We'll see you then for Shark Tale.